Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Thanks for joining us tonight. We promise to do our best to make it worth your time. Before we get to the main content of tonight's program, there are a couple of news items I need to mention. By now, you've likely heard about Kobe Bryant. The basketball superstar was killed today, along with his daughter and seven other people in Bryant's privately owned helicopter. It crashed into a hillside in Southern California during what would have been a flight to a basketball event. Bryant was 41 years old. His death is just kind of one of those moments that causes everything to just stop. You know, as the news reports first dribbled out today, it stunned the sports world. But since then, there have been comments and tributes from world leaders, major entertainers, and, of course, former teammates and competitors. They're stunned, too. Fans just spontaneously started showing up at the Staples Center in L.A. today. So even if you're not a sports fan or a basketball fan, you likely knew that the name Kobe Bryant, just a gut punch for his family and friends and fans. Another story today that sort of got overshadowed by the Kobe shocker, the U.S. Embassy compound in Iraq was targeted in a rocket attack. Three rockets hit the compound grounds. There was no major damage and no serious injuries, according to the State Department. Seems like that's what we were told the last time there was a rocket attack on Americans in Baghdad, and it wasn't exactly accurate, but no word on who was responsible for firing these rockets, but suspicion is centered on Iranian-backed militia groups. Earlier this week, the doomsday clock clicked forward, the closest it's ever been to midnight, a mere 100 seconds, which is a prediction of how bad things are getting for our planet. I don't think we need to take that literally, 100 seconds, but as if to punctuate that prediction, news surfaced that humongous plagues of locusts are ravaging huge swaths of Africa. One of the swarms, just one of them, is 35 miles long, billions and billions of very hungry bugs. I just thought the proximity of those two stories in the weekly news cycle got my attention. And with that little litany of news, we move on to our program. We're joined tonight by two intrepid investigators, guys who put it all on the line to pursue their particular passions, issues that should be of interest to all of us. Those of you who tuned in last weekend might remember hearing the name Tom Dongo mentioned during my conversation with writer-publisher Tim Beckley. And I mentioned I'd been hoping to get Tom on the show for years now because he's done such great work chasing some truly bizarre and mysterious happenings in and around Sedona, Arizona for, I guess, going on three decades now. Before the world had ever heard of Skinwalker Ranch, Tom Dongo was on the ground at a place with a similar range of weird activity, the Bradshaw Ranch near Sedona. He's done a really great job of documenting all of that. He's written several excellent books, but for one reason or another, it never worked out for him to be here as my guest. Well, somehow, you know, the stars aligned, the oceans parted, and tonight Tom Dongo joins us with updates on the ranch, on Sedona, portals, beings, weird encounters and other things that he's encountered out there in the darkness. He joins me in just a few minutes. In the second half tonight, a tough guy actor, martial artist, cop, private eye, whose life focus made an abrupt change from movies and TV to animal welfare. Chris DeRose was an up-and-coming actor on a path to stardom, but he took a detour into animal issues and became a front lines activist who's gone after some despicable people, rings of criminals who steal pets, steal dogs and cats, then sell them to medical labs for horrible, torturous experiments of questionable value. He's been arrested, jailed, threatened, roughed up, and shot because of his work on behalf of animals, and he has the scars to prove it. In Your Face is the name of his book, and it gives you a hint of his approach to animal issues. He's here a little bit later. Our webmaster, Greg Bishop, and I have pulled together our usual assortment of items and oddities from various media outlets. We call it Knapp's News. You can find it on the Coast to Coast website, Among the stories posted tonight, an update on the coronavirus. The number of confirmed deaths now above 80. 5 known cases here in the U.S. Millions of Chinese are basically quarantined. And investigators are now pretty sure this new killer was born in the meat markets of Chinese cities, which is also how SARS was born 17 years ago. The wildlife trade in China has been shut down by the Chinese government. And I'm hoping our guest, Chris DeRose, has some thoughts about the horrific conditions for animals and how that relates to human health. Also tonight, a think piece asking, what if the universe has no end? You know, science has always told us it's a closed system. It's a big one, but it's still, it's one that has some kind of limits. What if they're wrong? There's also a story about more UFO files about to be released online by the Ministry of Defense in the UK. You might recall they've made similar document dumps several times in the past several years. This is supposedly the last batch, I guess. That is, until they find some more. One other item of interest, David Politis, our frequent guest on Coast to Coast, author of the Missing 411 books about strange disappearances in national parks and forests, gave me an interview on camera a while back. I thought you might want to see it. We have that and more in Naps News. While you're there, you can find out how to become a Coast Insider. If you subscribe for a year, the cost is pennies a day, gives you access to a huge archive of programs, including the Art Bell Classics. You can listen anytime you want, as often as you want. And you can subscribe to George Norrie's television program, Beyond Belief, which digs deeper into subjects and guests that are familiar to listeners of this program. So check that out. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and the cat and your pet chicken and any other strays you might find. It's too cold for them outside. Put on a pot of Joe, slide your bod into those flannel jammies, plop yourself down in a comfy spot, turn down the lights, and turn up the radio, because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Tom Dongo, Merging Dimensions. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when I was working on an investigation of a paranormal and UFO hotspot, the Uinta Basin, trying to make sense of how so many different kinds of phenomena could be related in that they were all being reported in the same general area, including a place that came to be known as Skinwalker Ranch, one of the role models for me was Tom Dongo, because he had already tackled a hotspot of his own that has a range of activity very similar to that of Skinwalker, a place called the Bradshaw Ranch. The book he wrote back then, Merging Dimensions, explores the possibility that certain places in the world are gates, portals, central clearinghouses for weird stuff. The book is a classic, and now it's been updated with new photos of very strange things. I'm glad to welcome to the program at long last, and for the first time, Tom Dongo. Tom, great to have you here.
Well, it's great to be on the show, George. One of these days we'll have that beer we talked about 10 years ago.
Or two, you know?
Or two, maybe three.
I'd like to start with, you know, the book you co-wrote with Linda Bradshaw, and she begins the story saying that for her, it all started one night when she goes out to watch a meteor shower and she starts seeing things. Can you give me an idea when that started for her, and how soon after that did you get involved?
I heard it probably would have been, I got to Sedona in 88. So it would have been, about 1989. And then I heard about the stuff that was going on at the Bradshaw Ranch. And I was just really eager to go out there, you know, because it sounded so incredible. And I'd already written a couple of books on UFOs. And, so I got a letter from Linda, one day, and she said that she knew of me and could I come out to the ranch. Well, I was thrilled because I didn't know the Bradshaws at all. So I finally had an opening to go out there. And then after that, I spent 4 years out there with Linda, 3 or 4 nights a week, and cataloging and photographing and experiencing the stuff that went on there. And it was incredible, you know. Her husband Bob, he was pretty dyed-in-the-wool cowboy, and he came out one time and he saw enough, and he said that's it for me. He would not come out. He'd stay in watching TV while Linda and I were out there. And what happened with Bob was, and he was on national TV a couple of times with us. They filmed him, and I was out there one day. It was about 2 o'clock, and a ship, a disc, came over the hill with about 100 orbs with it, and it landed on the ranch down by the old apple orchard. And so he never said anything what happened after that, but that was enough for him. He didn't want to see anymore, so he wouldn't come out no matter what. Linda would go in and try to get him, and he would never come out. So it was a wonderful 4 years I spent there. We cataloged it. There are three books written about it. Mysterious Sedona, Emerging Dimensions, and Linda wrote one, Dimensional Journey.
Well, it reminded me so much of Skinwalker, and we can talk about comparisons later on. But it occurred to me as I reread your book today, the new version of it, that maybe a lot of what had happened, what you were able to witness and photograph and videotape, is because of the attitude that you and she went into this with. A very open attitude. I mean, some of this is pretty scary stuff that we'll get into, spooky at least, mm-hmm. and has caused a lot of other supposedly tougher people to turn tail and get out of there. But you guys, you had a very welcoming sort of a, hey, show us what you've got kind of an attitude, and it seemingly paid off.
Well, Linda was a very kind person, and she was the catalyst. All that stuff happened because of her. When she left, when she moved up to Montana, it stopped pretty much. But it has restarted. I've heard stories about things that have happened out there. So it's back up again. And I think the portal may be active again. It was right over the ranch house. I mean, it was about 20 feet off the ground, so not very far.
But I'm sure.
She was. Linda and I actually had a pact one night after 2 years of seeing this stuff, and we experienced most incredible stuff that you can imagine. I tried to put most of it in my books, but we had a pact one night. If they killed us, and we were serious, if they killed us, we were going to push this to the limit to try to find out what it was. Put out all stops and try to find out what it was. And Linda and I never got, even in most, if you read the books, the most incredible things that happened out there, Linda and I never got hurt in any way. It was very, very benevolent, and I know everything that happened on the Skinwalker Ranch. And to me, that was malevolent. And then we go to the Stardust Ranch, which I wouldn't go near down by Phoenix. That was another thing altogether. That was alien, extraterrestrial, and that, and they were bad. So I never had anything to do with the Stardust Ranch. But so, the Skinwalker Ranch. I think the Skinwalker Ranch was it's compared to the Bradshaw Ranch, it's good and bad. That's how I would put it.
Well, I think some of the bad stuff is the more sensational. So, and it's partly my fault for bringing those cases out. But I've been there a bunch of times, and nothing bad ever happened to me. I never had any real terrible experience, and I always had a good feeling there. It just struck me as I read your account that you had a feeling that there was maybe some malevolent stuff floating around there at the Bradshaw Ranch, but overwhelmingly, it was a positive experience.
It was. It was actually, pretty scary, but we enjoyed what we were doing. And, we pretty much perfected. Well, actually, I'll start at the beginning a little bit. Orb photography started on the Bradshaw Ranch and with Linda Crystal in Pine Bush, New York. Actually, I think it started first with Linda Bradshaw, and it spread around the world after that, after orb photography got popular. So that was one of the things that Linda first was photographing, was orbs. She's, I don't know what these things are. So I went out there, and we would just blaze away with cameras, and then see what was. We only had 35 millimeter film then. So then the next day we would develop the film, and see what was on the negatives. We wouldn't develop them into prints. We'd see what was on the negatives with their magnifying glass. And we did that for years. So the same with digital cameras. A film camera can see about 80% more than the human eye. Linda and I proved that over and over. Something could be right in front of you, and you can't see it, but the camera can.
Yeah, and some pretty striking examples that we're going to get into. Before we jump into the specifics about what you guys documented, can you share with me a little bit of the history of the area? You know, with the Uinta Basin, for example, we had found that there were phenomena being reported back more than 200 years. And I wanted to know if that's true for the Sedona area and the Bradshaw Ranch as well, or did you track it back that far?
You know, I wish I could go back to when the Sanawa Indians were there. The Sanawa vanished 800 years ago, literally vanished. They really don't know what happened to them, just like the Anasazi. You know, the Anasazi left these drawings on the walls that we have left with the ant people, and the ant people were graves, I mean, basically. So it would have been wonderful to have been able to talk to a Sanawa because I'm sure they had their wall paintings, you know, were pretty unusual, that they had seen something that they tried to transmit, you know, to the future. But I had some talks with Bob Bradshaw, and he said that in 1921, I asked him, I said, what kind of strange activity, UFO activity, do you know about here? Because he'd been there since 1949. So he knew all the old people. And he said that in 1921, there were some cowboys in Secret Canyon. The Secret Canyon is a world of its own. That's the things that happened in Secret Canyon. I wrote about a lot of the stuff that happened in Secret Canyon in my books. But anyway, to describe it, they were way back in the back of Secret Canyon, and the canyon filled with fog. The canyons here never get fog in the canyons, never. I've never seen it in the canyon. And they heard a roaring sound, and then the sky above them started to glow. And an orb came over the rim and down into the canyon. That's all I know of the story, but they thought they had gotten lost and were up by Flagstaff, where there is a train track. So it's the first one that I know of, really all I know of it, until about middle 70s, things started happening in Sedona. But before that, I don't think there was much.
Looking at Sedona itself, it's known worldwide as a hot spot for strange stuff, and spiritual people are drawn there, and you know, it's developed quite a tourist reputation as a place where like-minded people gather. Is there a reason that it's there? Why are there what you think are portals? Why there? Why not somewhere else?
I knew you'd ask that. I get asked that every time, every presentation I
sure.
do. It probably has something to do with the magnetic energy in the red rocks. The red rocks are the red is iron oxide. The red is, if you scratch one of the rocks in Sedona, it's white underneath. So the on the surface is iron oxide, and it's rust. That's why the red rocks are red here. It's rust. And it does come off nicely on white pants. I would have to attribute it to that, but there's something else here that's really strange. There's three, maybe four alien / U.S. I don't like to call them bases, but they're underground installations here. And one of them is extremely dangerous, and I won't tell anybody but top researchers where it is. And it's funny thing is, it's in plain sight. I show them on Google Earth. And I say, look, it's right there. And they go, oh, my gosh. So anyway, I think it has something to do with the underground installations, too. There's something here that they are interested in. And I'm not sure how to put all the pieces together. But I've been studying it for 30 years. And I'm as confused now as I was in the beginning.
You think there's more than one they, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a tunnel system that runs because you could hear the drilling here. It went right under the Bradshaw Ranch back about 1993. And somebody called me, and they said, I have a friend is a congressman. He said, I want you to tell Tom Dongo this, but don't tell him who I am. So I thought the underground tunnel system went from Secret Canyon through Sedona and up to Jerome. But he said he's partially right. It starts at Area 51, goes to Las Vegas, to the Navajo Army Depot outside of Flagstaff, which is a munition storage area. It's about 5 miles by 6 miles, and it does have nuclear weapons in it. So the tunnel goes to there, and then it goes down a secret canyon, and then goes straight south under Sedona and the Bradshaw Ranch to it stops in Jerome, which is about 20 miles from.
We're talking with Tom Dongo about his book Merging Dimensions. When we come back, going to get into a long list, a litany of these strange things that he had seen and documented. We're talking with Tom Dongo about the book he wrote, Merging Dimensions, co-written with Linda Bradshaw, who she and her husband owned the Bradshaw Ranch, which was sort of the epicenter of a lot of really weird stuff that is documented in this book, including photos. And one of the strangest things was these, basically a giant TV set that appears in the sky, and it had images on it that they were able to capture on their cameras, photos of some other place, some other reality, another location, another world. We're going to get into that with Tom and go down the list of other strange stuff that he experienced himself at these at the ranch and in the Sedona area right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Tom Dongo, you have a list that you include in the book, Merging Dimensions, of things you saw, experienced, photographed, documented, investigated, that you share with the audiences whenever you speak in public. Let's go through it. You started with orbs. You'd heard about orbs and craft. Talk about what you saw when you started going out, what you experienced, what you photographed.
Yeah, good question. You know, Linda and I were probably the first ones, and may have actually included Linda Crystal, but we studied orbs. We were the first ones to really study orbs, and orbs are living things, whatever they are. Over the years, got thousands of orb photographs, and and some of them are look like living beings, and some even have faces in them. I've got some with real faces. They're not human. They're kind of humanoid, but they're faces. Everything's there: eyes, nose, mouth, ears, everything. So other than that, I don't think anybody really actually knows what an orb is, but there's plenty of them, and they've probably been here millions of years. But they're strange things, and they are living things, whatever they are, and they have a measure of intelligence.
It looked like, there are multiple instances in the book where you're seeing these things, not just on negatives or photographs after you take the shot. It's you're seeing them there and then take the shot. I mean, Linda had talked about a couple that she saw that she really thought that they were living things, how they interacted with each other.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you an interesting story. I did UFO tours for 23 years. I don't do them anymore, but we had some phenomenal experiences out there. One night I had a tour, and we walked around and take flash pictures, and digital's work just as good as 35 millimeter. We switched to digital after we could get digital, but orbs show up instantly on digital. So one night we were getting orb photographs, and they actually came on. They lit up. And they were flying around us, and we thought, we had two women. It was a group from New York, and we had two women there, and the rest were men, and we were having fun with these things. They were flying around us. They were about the size of 12 inches, I guess. And the women got so freaked out. They said, "We're out of here right now," and they weren't kidding. So we left, but they were still flying around. We left. That's the only time I've ever seen orbs light up. But they did that one night, so that means they can do it.
You know what people say about orbs is it's pieces of dust that are picked up when the flash goes off. But you're talking about things that you're seeing with your own eye.
Oh, no. The dust thing, I had a guy on a tour one night. He was bound to prove that orbs were dust. He spent the whole night throwing dust in the air. And after a while, his camera was covered with dust, and he was covered with dust. And he came back and he says, "They're not dust." So no, they're not dust. I mean, occasionally they can't. Or rain. Sometimes rain will have the appearance of an aurora, and dust can. But you get so after a while when you're taking a lot of aurora photographs, you can tell the difference. It's pretty distinct.
And especially when you're seeing them with your own eye. I think Linda had described some of these glowing orbs that were 4 feet across. That's not a piece of dust.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a story. Bill Hamilton, Bill, he was
Sure.
at the time he was the number one UFO researcher in the world. This is quite a long time ago. And Bill and I were standing outside of Bradshaw Ranch, just talking, and in front of us, maybe 30, 40 yards in front of us, this white orb rose out of the ground like a bubble. And I've heard this happens a lot in Colorado, but not like this. So we were just standing there and just kind of looking at this thing, and it went up several hundred feet, and it blinked off, and it turned into a light aircraft, like a one-engine Cessna. The flashing lights, the navigation lights, the engine sounds, everything, and then flew over Sedona. And Bill just makes this casual comment, "Oh, I saw something like that once in the Tehachapi Pass." I thought he would be just stunned with amazement, kind of like I was, but he wasn't. So there's that. And Linda, we had a digital camera. We finally got a digital camera that would film at night. And Linda has had the film of it. An orb followed her, lit up, and followed her as she was walking back to the ranch house. She was walking through, there were some trees there, and she was far enough off, so there's some small pine trees and small bushes. So she was walking forward, but she turned the camera on and put it behind her. I've seen the film, and you can see this orb lit up, following her, sneaking back and forth between the trees, like an animal or something, and it followed her all the way back to the ranch house. It's so they're amazing things, and it's it would make a good study if somebody could spend a lot of money and a lot of time just studying orbs. Just try to find out what they are, maybe communicate with them.
In addition to orbs, a more structured craft, right? Classic flying saucers.
Yeah, well, we were we had 3 million candle power spotlights that we used all the time, and for I guess 6 or 8 months, we saw these lights. We thought they were landing, like aircraft landing at Cottonwood. So one night I said, "Linda, I don't think those are I don't think those are these are, and they were a different kind of orb. They were in the air all the time, and they were lit up. So I said, "Linda, I don't think those are landing lights. I think they're something else." So we started playing with these things, Morse code, with these lights out there in the distance. And I don't know how far away they are, because you can't compare them with anything, trees or whatever. But I would say at least a quarter of a mile. So anyway, these things started flashing back to us, Morse code, flash, 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 flash. One, two, three. And one night I had one. I mean, I'm still amazed and stunned by this. This shows you how intelligent these things are. I had my spotlight, and I was going left to right, back and forth, and this thing was trying to mimic my spotlight. It would get dim and flash and dim and flash. And that's the only time I ever saw one do that. But that, to me, that indicated a high degree of intelligence.
You also saw, encountered, documented strange animals, you and Linda. Just weird animals, critters.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember an instance of that. In another instance, I was riding with a tour guide one day in one of the back canyons near Sedona, and this creature walked in front of us, and we stopped the Jeep, and first thing he said, "No creature like that exists on this planet." It was kind of like a Codamundi, a raccoon, a fox, a wolf. There was nothing like it. And it just walked in front of us and disappeared in the bushes. So that case. But offhand, I can't think of any others.
Well, Linda had a relationship with, developed a, what she thought was a friendship with something really large, like a Bigfoot creature.
Yeah, white Bigfoot, big girl, yeah. Yeah, you know, that whole thing, as strange as the stuff it was that went on the Bradshaw Ranch, when Linda started talking about this white Bigfoot she'd made friends with, I thought, I had a hard time with that for a while. Until she started showing me the evidence. She would put fruit out in trees, grapes and whatnot, apples, high enough so that nothing could reach it. Nothing could climb up there and get it. It would have to be something 7 or 8 foot tall that could reach up and get it. And in the morning, all the fruit would be gone, the food would be gone. And on the ground would be sticks lined in triangles and zigzags and whatnot. It was a gift from the Bigfoot. And then in my book, I have a photograph of where a Bigfoot laid down in the dust. And I think I said 10 feet. And it shows the head, shoulders, the body, the arms. And Bob came out, who had been a rancher his whole life. And he said, there's no animal on a ranch that would make an impression like that in the dust. So Linda said, that's a big girl. So it was about 8 or 10 feet tall.
And she interpreted that as the big girl was letting her see what it looked like, what its dimensions were.
Well, Linda could get close to big girl. I actually saw it several times. And what proved to me that she was, you know, on the level was there was an old movie set on the Bradshaw Ranch. It was John Wayne as Elvis Presley. Some of the biggest actors had been there, and we were doing some stuff on the old movie set. When we're walking out, something picked up a 2x4 and hit a building 3 times. Bam, bam, bam. It's pretty well known that Bigfoot do that when they're communicating with humans, particularly, I guess, are the big trees. So after that, I was convinced. And the boys on the ranch, I'm just getting over a 3-week allergy thing, so I'm going to be clearing my throat from time to time.
I'm right there with you.
The boys had went deer hunting on the ranch. There were three of them, and about 10 minutes later, Linda heard a blood-curdling scream from out in the ranch. And a few minutes later, these guys come running a 100-yard dash into the ranch house, threw the guns in the corner, and were yelling, we believe, when they went out. So they saw a big girl.
There were other indications of animals, these weird tracks. In addition to Bigfoot, which there's photos of some casts that were made of these Bigfoot prints, but there were other strange, like dinosaurs, like reptilians, something or other.
Well, if I can take about 5 minutes, I'll tell you it's probably the strangest thing that ever happened on the Bradshaw Ranch. Now this one night, it was just Linda and myself. It was about 9 o'clock at night. They had 7 dogs on the ranch. If a lost dog wandered onto the ranch, they'd keep it. So the dogs, the sand around the front of the ranch house is like beach sand. And so in the winter, the dogs would dig into this, bury themselves in the sand to be warm. In the summer, they dig into the sand to be cool. So there were the 7 dogs. You had to be careful you didn't trip over them. So Linda and I were out there one night, and we could hear these sounds coming towards us, these kind of grunting, growling. And we were trying to, we were talking back and forth with each other. Is that a bear? Is it a javelina? Is it a mountain lion? Because they were all in that area. And it got closer to us, and it was going around a dry creek to the left of us. And we had our spotlights, our 3 million candle power spotlights. So we could still hear this thing, and we hear it walking in the creek. And then it roared like an African lion. And that really scared us. So all the dogs jumped up simultaneously and charged off into the dark towards this thing. And we both said, oh boy, now we're going to hear dogs torn to ribbons. And so we waited, and nothing, not a sound, none, zero. So about 10 or 15 minutes, all the dogs come trotting back and went laid back down in the sand. And we both figured, well, doggone it, the dogs knew what it was. There was no fight. So anyway, the thing continued on the dry wash. It kind of circled around in a half loop on the ranch. There was a horse corral at the east of the ranch and at the north of the ranch. And there were four or five horses in each one. Well, the horses started screaming. I've been around horse people and I've asked them, have you ever heard a horse scream? And it sounds like a woman screaming. So this thing was getting closer to the horses down in the east end of the ranch, and the horses were trying to kick their way out of the corral. They were 2x10 boards, about 10 feet high, I guess. And they were trying to kick their way out. So both Linda and I were going, oh boy, what's going to happen? So anyway, it all settled down. The horses settled down, and it stopped. So Linda and I went down with our spotlights as close as we dared to. We didn't want to go into the trees. So we thought this thing was in the trees, but it wasn't. It was on the hill looking down at us. So we said, it's time to call it a night. So we did, and first thing in the morning, we went back out there, and this thing had round tracks. They were 72 inches apart. I'm 6'2", and my stride is 27 inches. So this thing was 10 to 12 feet tall, and it had round tracks. And so it was actually on the hill. Its head was on the hill looking down at us. So I have no idea what this thing might have been, but it may have been some sort of a Bigfoot creature walking on its tiptoes. Because I do have one track that has the veins in the track, and I really believe it was a Bigfoot type creature that was walking on its tiptoes, because in the creek it was all rock, so there were no tracks there. So the only tracks we had were where it came out of the creek, went by the horse corral, and then the tracks disappeared on a hard road. But those are the strangest tracks we saw.
There's some tracks, photos that you have in the book of these three-toed animals, big, large three-toed animals. It kind of looks like a dinosaur track. Did you ever see what made those tracks?
We had a lot of photos of tracks on the ranch, and I really don't remember. We would and we tried casting them, and it's impossible. And that kind of beach sand, the powdery beach sand,
right?
Because the sand is so absorbent, it just absorbs all the moisture in the plaster, so you don't get a track. But we have dozens of photographs of strange tracks, and one of the weirdest was ones that I followed were like moon boots, like our astronauts. You know, they were smooth, kind of what they used on the moon. I saw pictures of them, and they looked the same. They were about size 13. I followed these for maybe 15 feet and stopped. And who in the heck made those? I have no idea. It wasn't one of us.
There were a lot of there were vibrations that would come out of the ground. It was something that reminded me of Skinwalker, as the ground would shake as if there was some.
That's when they were drilling the tunnel under the ranch. The windmill shook, and exposed pipes would shake. And you could hear the drilling. It went day by day. It went a little bit further, and it was pretty big. And it went towards Jerome. And you know, underneath Jerome's about 20 miles from Sedona, and it took $1 billion worth of copper in the 1800s under Jerome. And there are 75 miles of tunnels under Jerome, and that's where this big tunnel went. So I have the opinion that there's another alien base where people that live up there.
Well, there's also a lot of there's also a pretty strong government presence, or you presume it's government. It's sort of men in black types who've encountered you and a lot of other people who've been out there. When we come back, we're going to get into that and then talk about the photos, because you took some amazing photos, and it turns out there were things right in front of you, right directly in front of you, people, beings, that you couldn't see with your own eye, but they were standing right there, and you printed those photos in the new version of Merging Dimensions. We're going to talk about that when we come back with my guest, Tom Dongo.